It's All About Food with Karen Hartglass, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me on this January 11th, 2012. Here we are talking about food. And my mission, my wish for 2012 and for the future is to rethink the way we feel about food. We really need to rethink the way we think about food. We need to rethink what we eat when it comes to food, because it's all about food, and many of us could use some help. And that's what we're doing here on It's All About Food. We're talking with lots of people who are doing great things for the planet, for health, for animals. Let's not lose any focus here. I want to offer up some really happy, delicious, joyful stuff, but keep in the back of your mind somewhere that food choices affect all life on Earth, either positively or negatively. We've got all this industrial agriculture going on, and I love progress and I love technology, but sometimes things get a little out of hand, and food production is definitely out of hand today. And that's true when it comes to the factory farming of animals. Bad news. Horrific, cruel, environmentally damaging, supplying up so much low cost, and I put low cost in quotes when I say that. Animal products for food consumption. People are eating a lot more today, and what's happening? Our health is in the toilet. And in addition to factory farmed animals, industrial agriculture also includes the production of plant foods. Now, I love plant foods, but I don't need pesticides and herbicides and practices that are not sustainable for the planet when I get my yummy plant foods. I want organic, primarily locally grown. Okay, so that's what it's all about here on It's All About Food. It's about improving your personal life, your health, the health of the planet. And there's many, many people today doing a lot of work to change the way we feel about food, to change the way we think about food, and make it all yummy and good and joyful. There's a number of great women that are doing that today, and I want to talk to a few of them right now. So we have Betsy Carson. She's a filmmaker with a passion for sharing the benefits of a plant-based diet and is fueled by a lack of vegan programming options. And she's produced 52 episodes since 2005 of the popular public television program Totally Vegetarian. And she's creating this Project Vegan Mashup, and that's what we're going to be talking about, along with the chefs that are going to be part of this project. And right now we're going to talk with, in addition to Betsy, Tony Fiore, who's the host of Delicious TV's Totally Vegetarian. She's got podcasts and cookbooks and all kinds of wonderful things we're going to hear about. And Miyoko Shinner, who's published cookbooks as well. She's had a restaurant. Okay, so let's bring you all on to It's All About Food. Let's hear from Betsy.
Hi, Karen. It's great to meet you.
Oh, God. Hi. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Well, I've seen you all over the Internet.
Oh, thank you.
And it's nice to talk to you today.
We're trying.
And Tony, you're there too?
Yes, I am. Hi, Karen.
Okay. Hi. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Great. And Miyoko, are you with us also?
I'm with you, Karen.
Oh,
hi.
Hi. Okay, this is going to be fun. What are we making today on It's All About Food?
We're cooking up some good dishes, that's for sure.
Yeah, I know. It's just too exciting to think about. So, Betsy, tell us a little bit about Vegan Mashup.
Vegan Mashup is, I've been thinking about doing the show for a year with trying to, you know, ideally all these women should have their own show, but
we don't
have enough funds to do that. So we're putting them all on, we're mashing them up into one show, which is going to be really fun because it's going to have, you know, three recipes from three different chefs. Plus we're going to have a special guest chef on as well. So there'll be four different cooks on each episode cooking in their own kitchens. And we're going to be doing things like holiday classics, cheap eats, cooking with teens, cooking for teens, party vegan food. So we're going to have a bunch of different types of things to talk about and recipes to work with.
Well, somebody's got to do it. We've all been talking about it for such a long time. The time has come, and not only on the internet, but on television and everywhere. My wish for the future is that we don't have to say vegan cookbooks anymore. We just can say cookbooks because everything's going to be vegan. I don't know if I'll live to see that, but I put it out there. And when it comes to food shows, come on, we're ready. We're ready for the Food Network. We're ready. And there are... Okay, we're going to be talking to a few of you here, but there are so many chefs out there that are doing wonderful things, and it's infinite in terms of the shows that we can have with vegan cooking.
Yes, we want to get all those chefs on Vegan Mashup. We want a bunch of special guests, so we're just going to keep doing this show. This is just the first of many seasons, hopefully.
Okay, now where can people find this, and when is it going to premiere?
It's going to premiere probably in September, possibly this summer. It depends on how quickly we can complete our funding. We have a project, an Indiegogo project, so we're trying to raise funds on there. And we're also looking for public television sponsors for, you know, via nonprofits and businesses who might want to be associated with our show. So we've already actually, Friends of Animals is going to be a public television sponsor, and Maine Animal Coalition is going to be a public television sponsor, and we have a couple of other people we're talking to as well.
And what would you like to see happen with this project?
I'd just like to see it on every public television station in the U.S. And I think people don't have options. Certainly they don't have vegan options. When you look at cooking shows, there's very few vegan options. So we need to create more options, more vegan options in our food, in our cooking, in our on TV, on radio, so we're all doing our part to make that happen.
Okay.
We need to make the concept of vegan food more accessible so people understand how easy it is to prepare, how inexpensive it is, and how healthy it is, and delicious.
Right. Now, Tony, you've been doing this a long time, doing food shows, and I mean, does it ever get, like, are you continually inspired? Is the message ever tiring?
No, it's not tiring. And actually, the longer I've been doing it and the more people I've been meeting, the more inspired I get to try different things. It's a continuous learning process to me. So when you look at the first season that we've done and how far we've come now, even to our most recent podcast, you know, a lot of the change. I've learned a lot along the way. So I've changed a lot, even my own concept of vegan food and vegan cooking. So... No, I don't get tired of it at all, and I really, really enjoy working with all the foodies that I've met, and I'm really excited to be working with Miyoko and Terry. I think it's just going to be it's a very exciting prospect for me.
Yeah, my food preparation experience has changed a great deal over the decades as well. We're all, like, learning together somehow as we learn more about nutrition, as more food products become available. For me... and I'm not sure where your growth has been, you, Tony, Betsy, or Miyoko, but for me, most recently, I've been trying to get more flavors out of whole foods without using salt and sugar and oil. I'm trying to clean up my act, but at the same time make things really tasty.
I understand what you're coming from. I teach for Dr. John McDougall in his program. And so I have to work within those parameters frequently. I don't, you know, I cook without a lot of oil or no oil for Dr. McDougall, low sodium, and try to get the flavors out with other ingredients. But I think what we're trying to do with this show is we're going to have three different personalities. So there's going to be something for everybody in the audience. You know, three different personalities, three different cooking styles. There will be something for you. There'll be something for someone else. That's what makes this show, I think, so vibrant and special.
Now, here's a question. A lot of people love watching food shows, love them. So many people tell me, God, I love the Food Network. I love watching food shows. And yet, how many of those people actually go into the kitchen and make food?
Almost none. I say almost none. And I think it's the same in the cookbook market. There are tons of people who buy cookbooks, and they're really coffee table books. They look at the pictures. They flip through them. They dream about what it is they'll try to make. And generally, I think there was a study done. The average person makes two recipes out of every cookbook.
Right. I read that. I want to get back to that. But before we do, I want to talk to Miyoko just a little bit because we're going to exchange Terry for Miyoko in a few minutes because we don't have as many lines. But Miyoko, I just wanted to thank you because you were really at the forefront with Now and Zen. I was living in the Bay Area in the 80s and 90s. I'll never forget that restaurant. And,
oh, well, thank you.
And it was really ahead of its time. And it was like an oasis when I found it and loved going there. And then I used to travel quite a bit as a consulting engineer, and I was going back and forth, and I always flew United. And what a delight.
Wow.
What a delight. It was like, yes, getting that Now and Zen cookie was just such a thrill and such a treat. I felt like I'm not alone in this world. So I want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it was, you know, it's the pre-internet, and so
right.
We were sort of ahead of the curve there. Hopefully, I think the time is right now, and more people are beginning to listen to the message. So I think the timing is perfect for the show.
Can you just tell me, because I don't remember, how that all came about, the restaurant, and how did you manage to do all of that? Pre-internet.
You know, it was crazy. I came out with my Now and Zen cookbook in the early 90s. I think it was 1990 when the book was published. And then, you know, I wanted to open up a little bakery to show the world that people could eat this way without, you know, that vegan didn't have to be hippie food.
Mm-hmm.
And that was such an important mission for me. So I opened up this little bakery, which became a restaurant. And then a funny thing happened. We used to sell something called the Unturkey at Thanksgiving.
I remember.
We used to serve that as part of our menu. And someone said, you know, you should go down to this trade show, the Natural Foods Expo, and just see how people react to it. So I took it down there, didn't know what it was about, and in one weekend I wrote $50,000 worth of orders.
Whoa!
I mean, it was crazy. And I had no idea how to make the product. I had no facility to make it. I didn't know how to deliver it. And so I went back to the restaurant, and I just started faxing these orders to one of the distributors, you know, a big distributor. And they called me up and said, I don't know who you are, but stop faxing. And I just got on the phone. I convinced them to carry the product. And so we shipped I rented this commercial kitchen a trade show was in September. And by, you know, early November or late October, we had shipped $50,000 worth of Unturkeys. And so I sold the restaurant. We got into the Unturkey hip whip business and did that for a number of years. At one point, we were the second leading turkey alternative next to tofurkey.
Mm.
So that was kind of exciting for a while. But anyway, I was a mom. You know, I had three kids, and I couldn't do it all. So I had to kind of leave that behind for a while and took a hiatus for a few years.
Well, you really set a lot of ground for a lot of other people.
Now she's back.
And now she's back. Woo-hoo! Well,
yes, we're excited about it.
I can't wait.
It's a company, too. Yeah. So, great company with Terry and Sophie and Betsy.
Well, I want to thank you for all of that early work, and I can't wait to see what you're going to come up with in the future.
Well, thank you so much, Karen.
Okay, so Miyoko, I'm going to say goodbye to you and thank you for joining us on It's All About
Food.
Goodbye,
because and thanks so much for having me on.
Okay.
Bye, Miyoko.
All
we'll talk to you later. Bye.
And Terry Hope Romero is going to join us now. Terry, are you with us?
I am. Miyoko, just tag me in.
Okay, great. Thanks for joining us again on It's All About Food. I spoke to you recently with your wonderful Pie in the Sky book.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, great. Okay, so have you started filming at all, or you're still just in the fundraising?
We've started filming, but also we're in the fundraising. We just shot the promo, but we're really now in fundraising mode.
Okay, I want to talk about getting into the kitchen. Now, I'm not sure all of you, if you have individual missions, what you'd like to see happen in the world, if you just want to do food shows and write cookbooks, or if you want to see people get back into the kitchen, because this is what I really want to see. I want to see people getting into the kitchen. I want to see people eating plant foods. So I guess this is a great step forward, but with people watching and not going into the kitchen, do you have any ideas on how to make that connection? Tony, you've been doing this a long time. Tony, let's talk to Tony, and then we'll talk to Terry.
Yeah. Okay, so could you just repeat that again?
Yeah, it's this disconnect. People love watching food shows, and we need more and more and more gazillion vegan food shows, no question about it. But then we need people to actually go into the kitchen and make their food.
Right.
How do we do that?
Well, I think you have to take the mystery out of preparing food. There's an awful lot of recipes that when I talk to you, it's like, oh, I could never make that, or I don't know how to cook. So it's giving people, I think, the confidence and giving them, you know, easy, very accessible recipes, things that really just about anybody can do, and to improve their skills. I'm amazed at how few people cook their own food.
Yep.
And a lot of it is just, there's a lot of fear in the kitchen.
Yeah.
It's, you know, when you're comfortable in the kitchen, it's a bizarre thing. It's hard to understand. So I definitely want to see people going back in, because I think the only way to really take control of your health is to take control of your food, and you have to prepare your own food.
Well, you know, whether you're preparing it regularly or not, people need to know what's in their food. And one of the ways to do that is to make it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
Terry, I wanted to ask you, do you have thoughts about cooking in a limited space, like students who don't have a lot of room or people that have very small apartments?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, pretty much my entire life in New York City, I've been living here since 95, has been not optimal kitchens.
That's why I'm asking you. I knew you'd know.
Right. I'm here for you. I mean, like, yeah, these awful ovens that come with rental apartments. I mean, you know, it's really something like you have to take it one step at a time and kind of, you know, look for tools that you can multitask with. Like right now I'm tackling this issue about how to steam sticky rice. And there's all these beautiful Thai rice steaming devices with these gorgeous big baskets and these crazy spittoon-shaped pots. And I'm like, I can't fit that in my kitchen. So I've been multitasking with like a metal sieve and fitting it on top of a pot that I already use for about 80 different things. So I think it's feeling like you can pretty much feel like you're your own MacGyver in a kitchen and multitask tools and avoid like really big, crazy, like, you know, implements that you don't need, like standing mixers. I mean, I don't have one. I haven't had one in, like, I don't know, like 20 years or so. And life goes on, and I've made a billion cupcakes and, you know, all kinds of things. So yeah, it's realizing that you don't need a lot to really make really great food.
Okay, that's good. Now, the other thing is, what are the essential foods to have in the cupboard and in the refrigerator when you have limited space?
Well, I know, right? Like, what's essential? I mean, it's like I need to have, you know, olive oil. I mean, I think it's whatever you make the most of. I mean, I feel like something like quinoa you can use for so many things. You could eat for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Mm-hmm.
If you're really on a budget and you really wanted to eat something healthy and versatile, I think it's one of those things that will really, really take you places. Like, and canned organic beans are another amazing convenience food that are fast, and there's so many good quality beans now, ones that, you know, don't have that lining inside, you know,
right.
that really, you know, that taste good too. So it's think about foods that are convenient. Think about foods that you like to eat. You know, definitely avoid something if you think like, oh, it's healthy, I should be eating it, but you know you're not going to make. But if you feel like I love pasta, you know, stock up on, you know, whole grain pastas. Like, there's so many great ones out now.
Well, there's a number of students that want to eat well, and they're kind of overwhelmed with a new environment, being away from home and living on their own, but they there's a handful of them, maybe not a lot, that want to eat healthy. And it's a challenge for them in their spaces.
Yeah, absolutely. And definitely, if you have a roommate, see if you can team up on getting into something healthy. You know, whoever you live with. And in that case, you know, it might be like one roommate, two roommates, four roommates, I've been there, where, you know, you decide, hey, we really want to try to, you know, eliminate, you know, white rice or, you know, something like that, and we want to switch to something healthier. Then you can, like, team up and buy foods in bulk, too.
Right. Okay, what do you see, Betsy, as, do you have an idea for the set and the opening, what's the feeling going to be like? Is it going to be a traditional Food Network style show, or you have something else in mind?
Hopefully not. It's going to be in everybody's kitchen, so it's going to be a little more organic and a lot of fun, I think. It's not going to be a standard Food Network sort of set.
Right,
so
okay, I see. So you're... Is it likely you're going to move around to each of these different chefs' homes?
Yes. Yeah, we're okay. Shooting this in New York, California, and Maine, where Tony and I are both located.
Mm.
So I think it's going to give it a lot of dynamic range to shoot it this way. Yeah,
right.
And probably do some, you know, hopefully do some segments outside of the kitchen as well.
Okay.
So plus we're going to have guests. We're going to go to the guests that we have on. We're going to their kitchen, so we're going to see. We're going to see how they cook. So.
Yeah, you know, people really like to see other people's kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really do, and they look forward to that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Doing that. So.
Yes. So we're really excited about it. And in terms of cooking, like, you know, people. You know, what to have in the kitchen, I find sort of making enough so that there's leftovers. So if you're cooking a meal, there's at least lunch tomorrow. Or if not a big pot of soup, there's something for several days.
Yeah, absolutely. In the wintertime, soup keeps us going for many, many days. And it's fun because it starts out usually as one soup, and in two or three days it's morphed into something completely different. And then if there's a little leftover, it's a sauce. It just keeps on giving.
Well, and it solves that problem of needing something quick. A lot of people reach for food that's bad for them because they don't have anything on hand. So you can provide your own fast food by making sure that you do have leftovers.
That's right.
I like having a lot of fresh produce. Like, half our refrigerator is full of produce, and we're really into kale lately. And my partner Kate is really the cook in the house, and she buzzes up the kale like a tabbouleh, and it's in a salad. It's just amazing. It's quite delicious.
Let's just say an amen to kale. Kale is
a
superfood. I believe it saved my life. I love kale. And there's so many things we should be doing with it. And what a great vegetable, because it's around in the wintertime.
Yep.
Yeah. And very healthy.
You can eat it raw, cooked. You know, it has a lot of...
Absolutely. Super-duper kale. So I was talking a little bit before about how we've all kind of evolved over the decades with vegan cuisine. Tony, do you have any recent new favorite ingredients that you've been working with?
Recent new? No, I don't. I really do things pretty seasonally because I grew up in Italy, and that's pretty much the way we ate. So.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of anything that I've really discovered. I don't go for a lot of the processed food,
right?
You know, a lot of the real convenient foods. So I can't tell you I've discovered this great faux meat.
Yeah.
I do use some of it, but no, I say what I have been doing lately, and I learned that when I went down and did a cooking project, is using less oil. I've learned to really cut back a lot on the addition. I still use olive oil in food.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to go oil-free. But I really learned that when I needed a quarter of a cup or half a cup, I could really do it with a couple of tablespoons, and it worked out just fine.
Absolutely.
So I've really been doing more with cutting back on fats and salt, because those were the two probably my most vulnerable spots when I was cooking.
Yeah, well, it's pretty easy to make anything taste good if you just pour a ton of olive oil on
it. Yes, and then throw that salt on top. Yeah, it's true.
Terry, do you have any new ingredients that you're working with that you've discovered? I know you're working on an international cookbook. Any interesting ingredients out there to discover?
Well, I mean, they're not always healthy. I get really excited about our Thai soy sauces. Mm-hmm. They taste very different from like your standard Chinese soy sauce, and they really make your food taste like Thai food, you know, without doing anything really crazy. I mean, in regards to, you know, healthy-ish things, I find that I just like to increase more vegetables and things,
mm-hmm.
you know, like if a pasta dish is like, you know, maybe the ratio is like, you know, one to one with pasta and vegetables, like doubling up the vegetables and maybe cutting back on the pasta a little bit. If you want to lighten things up, is an easy way just to, you know, still have everything you like, but just get more of the healthy stuff and maybe cut back on the things that, you know, you can, you know, ease up on a little bit.
Right. I've been working more, well, maybe not with new ingredients, but kind of finding new things to do with old ingredients. And when I'm working on reducing oil in my life, so like the confessions, I'm trying to reduce oil in my life. I use more raw nuts and seeds in lots of different ways, soaking them and making creams out of them and then using them as a fat instead of oil. And really interesting flavors come out of it, and I feel better because I'm using a whole food rather than oil, which is processed.
Mm. Yeah, and you're using foods that we extract oil from. You're just skipping that part.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Betsy, what can people do if they want to support Vegan Mashup?
They can head on over to Indiegogo and make a contribution to Vegan Mashup. We'll have all kinds of rewards on that page. Or head to deliciousTV.com to find out more about it. And if there's a business or a nonprofit out there that wants to get their name out there associated with the show, they can write to info@deliciousTV.com and let us know. We'd be happy to talk to them.
Okay, great. And any other websites you want to promote out there before we go?
Sure. MiyokosKitchen.com and Terry's website is VeganLatina.com. VeganLatina.com. Yes.
Okay, terrific. Thank you very much for everything and for all those great, delicious recipes. And I look forward to even more. Thanks for joining me on It's All About Food.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. And, you know, we were just talking about kale for a moment. I want to remind you at my nonprofit, ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com, there's a green food show where I use kale for juicing, for salads, for steaming, and for smoothies. Check it out. And we'll be right back with Johanna McCloy of Soy Happy. We're back. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Say it with me. It's all about food, because it is. And we need to rethink the way we think about food. We need to rethink the way we feel about food. I've been saying that a lot lately, and I'm going to keep saying it because that's what I believe. Okay, another wonderful person who's doing all of this rethinking about food, and I'm going to bring her on in a moment. Johanna is dedicated to bridging cultural gaps and empowering individuals to realize their voices and their actions matter. With compassion and action, they can cross divides and help to generate the positive changes they seek in the world. Soy Happy was created with this in mind. She has a multicultural background, spending 17 years living in Spain, India, Japan, and Venezuela, fluent in Spanish and some Japanese. She attended Duke University and received her degree in comparative area studies and anthropology. And yet there is more. She studied acting with legendary Sanford Meisner in Los Angeles and is noted for her guest starring role as Ensign Calloway in Star Trek: The Next Generation. So much more. A published writer, publishing articles and essays in India Currents Magazine, Moxie Magazine, Journey Woman, and a book entitled Voices from the Garden. Gosh, I'm just like scanning this amazing little bio here, but let's get you on, Johanna. Welcome to It's All About Food.
Thank you.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. It's been about a decade since I last saw you.
I know, it's hard to believe.
Yeah, since I first saw you and since I last saw you.
It's true.
And that was about the time Soy Happy was being born.
Yeah, it was. It was about, I believe that was in 2002, correct?
Yeah, about that.
Yeah,
And
when Soy Happy started in 2000, so it was right when Soy Happy was at its busiest, I guess.
And I didn't know that January 10th was Soy Happy Day.
Ah, yes, very important day.
Excellent. Well, I celebrated yesterday.
Oh, good for you.
So I didn't realize a long time ago that you had this amazing curriculum vitae and speak different languages and have lived in so many different places. So is Soy Happy kind of a little pun there with the Spanish?
Yeah, you know, it was something that just came to me one day when I was creating the website, and I didn't have a name for what I was doing. It was just something that developed over time, you know, as I was taking action and generating some response and realizing, oh my goodness, I need to find a way to get all this information out there. And websites were new at the time. The internet was still pretty new. And I didn't have a name for what I was doing, and I had this little drawing of a veggie dog, and he just looked so happy. Thus the name. And yeah, no, it is a fun little play on words.
Okay, so tell me more about this project, Soy Happy and the Ballparks.
Well, Soy Happy originated simply because I went to a Major League Baseball game. It was my first Major League Baseball game, so I went in completely naive. It was the L.A. Dodgers and Dodger Stadium, and I was newly vegan. I was vegetarian, and I was thinking, well, they'll probably have a veggie dog. And that's why I say I'm naive, or was. So I decided to go look for the veggie dog during the game, and lo and behold, there was none. Not only that, but there were no viable vegetarian options of any kind. It was French fries or popcorn, and that was about it. And the stadium was packed, and as I went back to my seat and I looked around, I just started to feel really overwhelmed by the number of people there and the absolute lack of options for so many people who choose to eat vegetarian food. And I didn't know quite how I was going to deal with it. I mean, you know, obviously one thought was, well, oh, well, that's how it is, which is, you know, how I think most people probably react. But I was just determined to try to do something about it because I knew there was a market, and I knew that there were fans who were either eating before the game or bringing their own food or waiting until after the game. And I thought, well, clearly it's a business proposition for concession managers. So that's how it all started. I started doing some research before I contacted the concession manager on the rise in demand for viable vegetarian foods. And then I contacted him, and he was responsive, but he did tell me that Farmer John had a contract in place with Dodger Stadium, Farmer John being the provider of all the hot dogs, and anyone who's been there knows that Farmer John is an icon or a logo that is on virtually everything that's Dodger related. On their tickets, it's on everything. It's Farmer John dogs. So they told me that they had the option of first refusal on what might be considered a competing product, which I thought was kind of silly. You know, veggie dog is hardly going to
be a competing product.
Right. But they did feel that way. So the concession manager was fortunately very responsive to me, and he did say, we are getting some requests for kosher dogs, which we don't have. And I said, well, I know that, you know, some veggie dogs out there are also kosher, so you can satisfy, you know, two of your customer bases with one product. And he said, well, if we have enough requests, I'm tallying them, and I will present this. So thus began the outreach.
Right. Get people to request them.
Yeah. And over time, you know, just to fast forward, over time, I not only managed to get Dodger Stadium to introduce veggie dogs, but I began contacting all the Major League Baseball stadiums individually and found out none of them carried veggie dogs when I started. And now there's, I think, 22.
Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah.
But part of the problem is that the people at the stadium, the managers, don't really have much say. There are these major contracts with the food service in many of these stadiums.
Yeah, it's been an issue. Actually, I have to say, fortunately, it's only happened a couple of times. It just so happened that that was my first experience. So I got an education quickly on how that all works. And also on how food service works, which, you know, there's no real reason for your average person to know that unless they're in that world. But it did inform me on the best way to go about trying to introduce a new item into that world. If you know how to navigate it, then you're better able to get your message across and hopefully introduce the item. But primarily, you know, it really was about people asking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Soy Happy really puts most emphasis on, consumer empowerment, because I certainly felt empowered. And I thought, wow, I was sitting at a ballpark thinking, oh, well, and just because I decided to make a phone call and let my own, you know, suggestions be heard, I was able to make a dent and make a difference.
You know, it's such an important point. When we're in a restaurant, some of us don't have a problem asking for what we want, especially when it's a place that doesn't serve any vegetarian foods. I've been doing it for decades. Some people are a little more intimidated in speaking up for what they want, but many of us have been nagging and whining and saying, is there chicken broth in your vegetables and in your rice and et cetera? but that's actually easier than a ballpark, because there isn't this one-on-one intimacy getting your needs supplied. So it's a really a bigger project, but important that we need to ask. We need to be going to our supermarkets and talking to the manager and saying, can you get such and such a product, and going to the ballparks and everywhere. Absolutely.
Yeah, and you know, and beyond that, even if you think the request that you're making is futile going in because you think it's not the kind of place that would sell whatever it is you're asking for, you know, so much of it is just opening the consciousness on the receiving end that these products are even out there, or that there are people who may want them. And I often think about veggie burgers or soy milk as perfect examples. I mean, veggie burgers for a long time were weird to the mainstream population, and now that is the one item that most people will fall back on and know that is most likely to be available on a menu,
at least
as far as vegetarian options go.
At least in the blue states.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then the same thing goes with soy milk in coffee shops. I mean, if you asked for soy milk a while back, you know, people would look at you and say, well, no, you know. And now soy milk is almost standard fare. People don't find that strange.
Okay, Johanna, you're in California. You're not in the rest of the country, but more and more we're seeing soy milk, at least in all the Starbucks that are on every corner.
Yeah, and that's how it started. Yeah, exactly.
But there are still plenty, like Dunkin'.
You know, if you don't ask, they won't know.
Like Dunkin' Donuts. Let's get soy milk in Dunkin' Donut restaurants.
Yeah.
Okay, but I shouldn't talk, because I rarely go in those places unless I want to use the bathroom.
Yeah, exactly. They're good for that. Road trips.
So the tofu hot dog, the vegetarian vegan hot dog, there were a handful out 10 years ago, and now there are many more.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty tasty.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that I'm recommending everybody eat on a regular basis, but certainly in a ballpark to keep that American spirit.
That's exactly it. Exactly. I mean, I will confess, it's not a product that I readily eat at home, very often anyway, but it is the very first thing I'm going to consider going to a ballpark. It's just, you know, it's what makes sense, what genre of food makes sense in a given establishment as far as vegetarian options go. And, you know, on one of the issues that the ballparks, you know, it's not just introducing the dog, it's all the follow-up that goes with it. Because often what will happen is it's introduced in one stand. They don't advertise it. They don't really inform their fans, nor do they really inform the concession staff at the other stands.
Mm-hmm.
So, even if someone knows they're available and they ask, they may not get, you know, very informative responses.
Right.
And then the on top of that, like the at Mets Shea Stadium, when Shea Stadium introduced it prior to the new stadium opening, they opened what they call a healthy stand. And they put it way at the end, one far end of the stadium on the first level, which was very hard to find and access. It was like, you know, a puzzle trying to even get there. And it was all by itself at the end of a hall.
Mm.
And it was called the healthy stand. Well, you know, it's fabulous to have healthy food, but to separate it and label it as such is, mm-hmm. is not doing the business any justice, for one thing, because they're going to sell less, honestly, I think.
Absolutely.
By doing it that way.
Some of the smartest restaurants are the ones that have food for everyone. And some of the great chefs are realizing this now, that people want to go out to dinner and they want to bring their whole family or a group of friends. And, you know, according to the statistics, I don't know if you've seen them, a vegetarian resource group recently put out a post where they did a Harris Interactive poll, and there are 7.5 million vegans now in the United States, 3% of men, 2% of women, and a lot more people, almost 48% of the people they polled have vegetarian meals sometime during the week. So it's a big group, and when people eat out, some people are vegetarian, some people are vegan, and you all want to be together, and restaurants mm-hmm. are smart when they serve everything. So we can all be a family together.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a vegetarian resource group that also created the phrase the vegetarian veto, which means that exactly that. I mean, when they talk to food service accounts such as restaurants or such, they will tell them, you know, if you have a group coming in and one of them is a vegetarian, they have the veto vote on coming in here because you may not have something for that one person. So it's called the vegetarian veto and how it affects large groups.
That's good.
Which is true. But beyond that, even, I mean, I just think that labeling it healthy, it is healthy, and anybody who eats it or wants it knows it's healthy, so you don't need to sort of put it aside and give it that label. You can make it, you can give it a really fun name. You can name it after something to do with your mascot or your team or your region or your ballpark, and put it in with a regular stand, and it will sell even better. People, and you can have a vegetarian insignia on there if you want. People will know it's vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't think that labeling it healthy is necessary. It's known that it's healthy. It's understood that it's healthy.
Do you have any good stories related to getting hot dogs, vegetarian hot dogs, into the ballparks?
Well, I would say that, the Dodgers, as it turned out, being my first ballpark, was by far the most, you know, interesting process because of the Farmer John issue. And what ended up happening, they said they would introduce, after they received enough, you know, fan input, they did decide to introduce a veggie dog. Now, the other thing was there was no veggie dog available through their distributor.
Mm-hmm.
So I put the concession manager in contact with someone who represented at the time Yves Veggie Cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
And the person from Yves Veggie Cuisine would hand deliver veggie dogs from their warehouse to the stadium in order to make it possible. And then the stipulation from Farmer John was that there could be no advertising and no promotion.
Oh, gosh.
So, so it was a real learning curve for me as far as all the obstacles that come into play. And then making sure that the product is sold and that people know it's there, because
they have to know about it. You have to advertise for it.
Yeah.
And sometime during the game,
I made it part of my Soy Happy's endeavor is to generate attention. And as I always say, I celebrate the options. I make it festive. I make it fun. I want it to be a situation where, you know, the concession managers and the people that I'm consulting with understand that I'm about festivity and celebration and promotion. I'm not a negative person, and I come from a place of, woohoo, you know, look at what's possible and how happy you can make people. And then organizing outings to these ballparks once veggie dogs are introduced to show them how many fans are happy and inviting the media and, you know, just making it a big happy, thus the name, you know, a celebration of vegetarian food and happy customers, basically.
I'm all about that. It's a wonderful, joyful, happy thing eating these foods.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
So the strange thing, maybe it's not strange, maybe it's just American, is that sports activities in stadiums and ballparks are associated with junk food.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why that has to be, why we can't go and see a game and eat something healthy.
You know, I know. That's an interesting topic.
Why can't you get a veggie wrap?
Which they do have.
Well, maybe.
I mean, and that's the other thing.
Maybe
I mean, a lot of these ballparks, and I should note that there's a venue vegetarian guide on the Soy Happy website, and that has all the stadiums, the Major League Baseball and Football League stadiums, and all the vegetarian and vegan options they offer. So that someone who doesn't know, well, you know, I'm going to a game at, you know, such and such a stadium, and I really don't know what they offer, they can always go to the website and find out. Because it's not, you know, they do offer far more vegetarian foods now than they ever did.
Sure.
When I started, and veggie wraps are not uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
Veggie burritos, salads.
Yeah.
You see salads in some of these.
Maybe. I don't go to stadiums very often. All I know is I was at the U.S. Open a few months ago in Queens, and I could not find anything.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like you said, that, you know.
I photographed all the menus.
On the junk food.
And I photographed all the menus, and I was meaning to look at them again today, but I forgot. But I just wanted to remember all the things that they offered and what they didn't offer.
Yeah.
Yeah,
greasy fare seems to be, and who's to say why that is? I think it's just long standing. It's just one of those things. It's really funny to me. I got interviewed once on ESPN, one of their radio stations, by a couple of guys in Denver, and they did tell me prior to the interview, well, we're gonna, you know, joke with you a bit. We're gonna give you a little bit of a hard time. You know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I knew that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And they did, and what they said in the interview was how un-American it was to consider veggie dogs in baseball stadiums. So, you know, it just goes to show how the mentality, you know, it's a shift in cultural, it's like a paradigm shift, you know?
Well, I'm sure the products in stadiums have changed over the years because of a changing culture, and it may not have... And this doesn't have to do with vegetarian food, but the foods have changed because our tastes have changed and products have changed. And so for them to say something like that is really ridiculous.
Oh, I know. It was ridiculous, and I just laughed it off. I mean, what I had to say about it was, how more American does it get, frankly? So to speak, frankly. Pun intended. To have a variety of foods and to be able to accommodate a wide variety of cultures.
You know, I would like to think that something that's American is innovative and making the world a better place. And that's what
one would hope.
That's what I want to stand for and be proud of. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a lot of memories when I was young at the baseball stadiums here in New York with the guys that would walk through the aisles going, hot dogs, hot dogs,
yeah.
Get your ice cold snow cones, beer here.
Yeah, very well done there.
Thank you. Well, that's how I was brought up to talk. And I'm looking at last week's New Yorker magazine, and I'm not exactly sure what the cartoonist had in mind, but there's a cartoon with a guy going down the aisle in a baseball stadium, and he's carrying guns and alcohol and saying, guns and alcohol, hey, I've got guns and alcohol. I just saw that today. I thought it was funny because I knew I was going to be talking about this. But how different are guns and alcohol relative to some of the awful things that are sold in stadiums today that people consume?
I know. Well, you know, again, it's the cultural paradigm. It's just consciousness.
Okay, we just have a few minutes left, and outside of the ballpark, what else are you doing for the vegetarian vegan world these days?
Well, I don't limit myself to ballparks by any stretch. It's what Soy Happy's become known for, so that tends to be its big emphasis. But I work with all kinds of food service accounts. So food service meaning anything that's not retail. So if you eat out and they cook food for you, that's considered food service. Mm. And I've worked with a wide variety and helped them in getting, you know, a good vegetarian option for them to suit their customers that works for them by acting as a liaison and then promoting it for them. And I've worked with pizzerias getting soy cheese and non-dairy cheese. I've worked with cafeterias and delis and football stadiums, soccer stadiums. So it's widening, you know, the scope is widening, and I tend to be doing more of that.
That's really important. Because most, I keep talking about this, I want to get people back in the kitchen, and I want people to start making their own food because we're going to be a lot healthier if people do and they realize what's in their food. But so many people today are eating fast food restaurants and cafeterias and restaurants. Even if you're in the hospital, you're eating food that's prepared and not prepared typically from scratch. And there's a lot of really strange ingredients that go into products that ultimately go into prepared foods. Strange stuff.
I know. But, you know, my bottom line is what is comparable to what's standard at a given place, and at least make the comparable product, you know, in terms of a vegetarian so-called version of it. I mean, it stands alone, which is why I hate saying it's a version of meat or it's a version of dairy.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how people see it, and that's how it is utilized. So that's really where I come from. It's like, you know, if you're going to have bagels and cream cheese, why not have soy cream cheese too? And it's not that soy cream cheese is necessarily the greatest, most healthiest option, but it's the most, it's the one that makes the most sense given that where you are and what you're eating.
Absolutely. Well, part of the idea, I think, is for people to know that they're not going to be deprived of anything. And I think we're all about moving the bar, moving the average along to a better place. And with these things that are being offered, veggie hot dogs, veggie hamburgers, veggie tofu cream cheese, people can see, oh, yeah, I can try that. I can have that. And they don't have to panic.
Yeah.
And it, and then they may be open to including more fruits and vegetables in their lives, and that's where we need to go.
Yeah, I agree completely. And, you know, restaurants are doing a great job of that. I mean, we're talking mostly about concessionaires and those sorts of places, but the restaurant, fine dining, those places are doing better and better jobs of providing vegetarian foods and well, vegetarian menu options that are really healthy and filled with goodness. And I've often had this experience, and I've shared it with others who've been in the same situation where you go to a restaurant and you don't see anything necessarily on the menu that suits you as a vegetarian, and you very politely say, is there anything you can do? Is there something you could put together? Or you call in advance, and they say, yeah. And it's been the case that the food they serve you ends up being the food everyone looks at and says, oh, my God, that looks really good.
That's right. That's always happened. They see all those colors. They see how fresh it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so important for all of us to just stand up for what we believe in and ask for it in a very polite, natural, non-judgmental, friendly, loving way.
Exactly. That's the spirit.
With joy.
Yes.
With joy. Let it be a celebration.
Yeah. I always say, you know, come from a place of wanting them to please you. Don't come from a place of anger and hostility. It's a business. And if they think that you're the kind of customer they want to please, then they're going to be more apt at doing something about your suggestion.
Right. Well, we just have a couple more minutes, and I'm just remembering how I met you, and that was when we were working together. We went up to Sacramento, and we were trying to get the legislators to agree to support a resolution to get vegetarian options in the schools.
Yeah. And I really enjoyed that, by the way.
And it was an interesting experience. I encourage everyone to go and lobby their representatives and just see what goes on.
You know, that was a first, and I have to say, the only time I've done that. And I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, I've done it a few times, and it can be very frustrating, but you get to see how our legislators are influenced, and if you can get their ear, which is frequently filled by the noises of lobbyists that aren't standing up for what we really want, it's important to get their ear and educate them in a way that, with information that we want them to have.
Yeah. Well, and also I think, kudos to Barbara Gates, who was the person who spearheaded that resolution. She was she's a perfect example, again, of a so-called regular person who's not necessarily already in the world of activism, who just by virtue of being a mom, who has kids who don't have options at schools, became an activist in her own right. And she'd never done it before either. Here we all were.
That's right.
You know, walking the corridors of the Capitol building, and she had put together that package, and she was just ultimately professional, and we won.
That's right. The resolution passed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just want to end on a happy note and to let everyone know that each one of us can make a difference.
Absolutely. So, all you have to do is speak up and you're done.
That's right. Johanna, thank you so much for joining me on It's All About Food.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And I hope
we
can share a veggie hot dog together someday soon.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, take care.
You too.
I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me. And you can reach me at info@realmeals.org if you have any comments or questions. And go to responsibleeatingandliving.com. That's where you can find me and a lot of great information. Have a very delicious week. Bye-bye.